powered from the Perdomo Cigar Studios Black Stage in Indian Trail, North Carolina, and broadcasting from California, it's episode 140 of the Primetime Show. Tonight, we welcome Eduardo Fernandez and Terrence Riley of Aganorsa Leaf. And as always, the Primetime Show is sponsored by Saga Cigars. De Los Reyes Cigars introduces another chapter of the Saga Celez. Celez is a Spanish word that means leisure after work. In the spirit of the standing ideal of owning your own journey and making your own saga, the Saga Celez is the perfect companion to enrich those moments of choice, making them truly yours. Saga Celez carries a blend of Criollo Olor and Piloto Cubano wrapped in a selected Ecuador shade Claro that generously delivers with elegance a surprisingly rich and balanced smoke. It's available in three sizes at an affordable price. Be sure to ask your retailer for Saga Celez. And by Perdomo Cigars, awarded Nicaraguan Cigar of the Year in 2014 by Cigar Journal, Perdomo 20th Anniversary brand has consistently earned the highest scores in the industry and is a top seller in humidors around the world. The Perdomo 20th Anniversary blend requires tobaccos that have been carefully hand-selected and are well-aged for a minimum of 8 years. The Perdomo 20th Anniversary is offered in three distinct wrappers: a smooth, creamy Ecuadorian Connecticut, a rich, earthy Cuban seed Nicaraguan Sun-Grown, and a dark, oily Cuban seed Nicaraguan Maduro. Combining these beautifully bourbon barrel-aged wrappers with thick, high-priming binder and filler tobaccos gives each blend a balanced complexity with layers of rich flavors and smooth, elegant aromas. Perdomo Cigar is a family-owned and operated company headquartered in Miami, Florida, with manufacturing and agricultural facilities in Esteli, Nicaragua. Perdomo's highly acclaimed cigar brands include the Perdomo Estate Selection Vintage, the Perdomo Double H 12-Year Vintage, Perdomo 20th Anniversary, Perdomo Reserve 10th Anniversary Champagne, Perdomo Obama Bourbon Barrel Age, Perdomo Lot 23, and many more. For great tasting notes and pairing information, check out the new Perdomo website at www.perdomocigars.com. And by Aganorsa Leaf. Great Leaf makes great cigars. Aganorsa Leaf stands out because of the distinctive flavor of our Corojo 99 and Criollo 98 seeds cultivated by Cuban agronomists on the best lands of Jalapa and Esteli, Nicaragua. When you smoke one of our JFR, JFR Lunatic, Guardian and Farm, or Casa Fernandez cigars, you experience the unique taste and aroma that makes Aganorsa Leaf special. Smoke one today and enjoy the signature flavor of Aganorsa Leaf. And by Miami Cigar and Company. Nesta Miranda said it best: there is a mystery and depth to Africa that captivates my spirit, always drawing me to come back. This cigar, Don Lino Africa, captures the way going there makes me feel. Cigar making is an art form, but in that moment when the cigar becomes art itself, you have something special. Don Lino Africa returns from Miami Cigar and Company. This time, the blend you remember blended even more masterfully this time in partnership with Tabacalera A.J. Fernandez. An exotic and complex blend meant to mesmerize. It's available in 5 box press vitolas. Don Lino Africa returns. Ask for it at your local retailer. And by Drew Estate, check out and download the Drew Diplomat app for your mobile device. Keep up with everything going on at Drew Estate. Experience the subculture that is the rebirth of cigars. Available on iTunes and Google Play. For more information, check out www.drewdiplomat.com. And as always, all the live streaming on the Primetime Show is sponsored by Drew Estate. Well, welcome, everybody. This is episode 140 of the Primetime Show. Today is Thursday, May 28th, 2020. This is Will Cooper. I'm on the Black Stage in the Perdomo Cigar Studios, joined cross-country by my friend and colleague, Mr. Aaron Loomis.
How you doing tonight, Will?
I'm doing well.
Good. Got a bit of a heat wave over here, but hopefully that wraps up soon. I know you got some rain coming your way.
Yeah, we've had bands, and we were just saying we had bands and bands of rain coming in, and it is very wet. We had a little break on Memorial Day. That was the only day we had a break for any outdoor stuff.
Nice. And your bracket isn't doing too well, so it's kind of keeping that depressing theme going on for you.
But you know what's weird? The brackets, like, as bad as I started out, like, most people's brackets are busted right now.
Oh, yeah. We all ended up in the same place.
Yeah. So, as weird as it may sound, I might not finish in last place with this. Not that I'm going to win it.
Yeah, Bear's not looking too good.
Bear's not looking too good. But everyone who picked those American League baseball teams has been – I don't think anyone's got those four. Like, does anyone have an American League team left in there?
Bear does. He has the 04 Sox. That's it. He's the only guy left.
He's the only guy left, yeah. Yep. And I figured he'd have that one. But, yep. But you know, because everyone had the Yankees going in that tournament.
Yep.
So imagine if it's Miguel and Hector, the Reds and the Mets. It's, yep. Like, it's going to be like unbearable.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm like, Hector, your Mets are like, you should be happy where you are right now.
Yep.
Just relax. But that's crazy as that's going. So I don't know. If we don't have baseball, I was gonna see if Hector wanted to simulate something for us this year. If they don't do another dream bracket,
yeah,
so, maybe we'll do that because Hector's got the simulator.
Yep.
But anyway, I think we should introduce our guests tonight. Without further ado, I want to welcome both these gentlemen. Great to have them both on the show. Mr. Eduardo Fernandez and Mr. Terrence Riley of Aganorsa Leaf. Eduardo and Terrence, welcome to Primetime tonight.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, it's an honor. I know we've been wanting Terrence has been a great friend of the show, and Eduardo, we've been wanting to have you on, and we do appreciate you making the time on this Thursday night. So thank you very, very much.
From Nicaragua.
Yes, from Nicaragua. So it's a little earlier for you than for me, at least. So we won't keep right. you too late. But no, we do really appreciate it. Terrence, you're not out on the balcony, or are you just?
I'm out on the balcony.
Oh, but you have the
promotional purposes.
The virtue, yes. exactly. So this is great to have you guys on. So you know, Eduardo, you have this operation Aganorsa Leaf, which we're going to talk a lot about, and it's just a great conglomerate with a lot of moving parts. And I'd like to kind of what we always like to start off with, though, is we like to always find out about our guests and their first cigar smoking experience. So, Eduardo, what was your introduction to smoking cigars?
Okay, basically Cuban types, because I lived in Spain for 10 years. So my basic introduction to cigars was while I lived in Spain with Cuban cigars, which are easy and reasonable to get there.
And how old were you like when you started? Did you start young? Did you start older?
No, in my mid-30s.
Okay. That's about when I started too. Mm-hmm. Except you're a lot younger than me, so I'm actually older than I look. So no, so that's but what were you doing prior to getting into the cigar business in Spain?
Okay, when I graduated from the university, I studied finance, and I went to work in international banking in New York City, and I worked there for 10 years. But being Cuban, I always had an entrepreneurial streak in me and wanted my own business. But it was hard enough to crack because of the having the working capital or even the knowledge to start a business. But I was lucky in my mid-30s. I started with my brother a pizza chain similar to Domino's, but we also sold in the store, similar to New York type pizza pies and slices. It was very successful from day one. So we grew like rabbits and expanded quickly. And within a 10-year period, for me, it was enough. And I decided to sell. So we went public in the stock market in Europe, and I sold my shares. And with that money, I retired. I gained my financial independence. But soon enough, I got bored. And I said, what am I going to do the rest of my life? I was 48 years old. And then I decided that to be involved in agriculture, something I'd always dreamt of, and I work in stages in life, and this was, let's say, my final act, and it would be my lifetime experience from then on. So I came to Nicaragua and Costa Rica looking for agricultural projects, and funny enough, I fell in love with Nicaragua. I found it a very receptive country, the people very friendly. Land prices were still very reasonable because of the revolution. And if you don't inherit land, it's very expensive to purchase. So I came here and very receptive. The ocean was close to me too. Having been born in Cuba, I was always an island person. And in Costa Rica, then to San Jose, to the ocean was like a 4 or 5 hour drive through mountains. Nicaragua, within an hour, you could be in the ocean. So that was also attractive to me. So I settled on Nicaragua, and then I started looking what I could do in Nicaragua. And run behold to me, I found that Nicaraguan tobacco was one of the best in the world. Back then, it was the end of the boom. And not many people were basically getting out or crashing but I started small because I had to, in my conception of business, you have to basically crawl, then you walk, and then you run. And tobacco is very complex, and a lot of detail, a lot of knowledge, a lot of years experience are required. So I went to Cuba, which I had never been in 40 years. I left in 1960 when I was a 10-year-old boy and was raised in the States. That's where I got my education and my basic business form. And in Cuba, I went to Vuelta Abajo, which is the famous growing area number one in the world. There's no question about it. These two little towns called San Luis and San Juan. So I recruited some old farmers that were basically in their 60s and 70s, but they had all the knowledge in the world. And that's how I really began my tobacco experience, because people are very important in business. In fact, they're everything. And because of the crash, we were very fortunate that the land became available, very rich, qualified land that had been planted since the 60s by the Cubans that had originally come to Nicaragua, both in Jalapa and Esteli and in Condega. So it was one of those situations that, Eduardo, you grab this or you let it go. Sometimes in life, opportunities come about, and one, you're lucky to see it, then you really have to take your chance or let it pass, no? And it was too good to pass because tobacco land is very particular, the regions and everything involved. And this was, once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. And I jumped in it in a big way. So that's how I began. This was 1998. I had landed in Nicaragua in 97. Funny enough, Plasencia, which I had met and was introduced to, suggested that tobacco was, very interesting and good business. One of the aspects that I really liked, because I came from an international environment, was that our quality of tobacco was, worldwide famous. So it could be an international experience. It was obviously not in Nicaragua. People don't smoke here much, but it was basically an international exposure. So that was very attractive to me. And that's how it all began.
So it began where you wanted to get into Nicaragua in the agronomy piece of that, the agricultural
exactly,
piece.
Exactly, right.
Right. And but tobacco was what you, were you seeking out tobacco at the time? Or was it like you just...
Oh, it's just by serendipity. Sometimes things come about naturally, It's like nature, right. Which often to me, it's like a sign, that's meant for you.
Right.
It's not forced upon you or you're not forcing it. It just comes naturally, Just like when you meet a girl... She's friendly. She's nice. It helps a lot that you have to convince her,
Right.
So I look at life sometimes in that way. Opportunities come about, and you're lucky. And I'm a lucky person, in essence, overall. So it's something, that's like was kind of meant to be.
Right.
And I just grabbed the opportunity and never looked back.
Sure.
And I also, in my business, I always do things in a big way because in the end, it's the same energy, the same stress, basically the same work, whether it's small or big. You just need to build the structure and have the right people. It took a while. Life is not easy. A lot of hard knocks, but that's how you learn. And that's how you learn from your mistakes and your errors, and you become better at it. It's a process.
It sure is. It sure is. Was it around that time when you acquired Tabacalera Tropical from Pedro Martin as well?
No, that happened like 4 years later because I started from the agriculture. So my respect and love for the leaf was first and very important. So I did things a very traditional way, very old-fashioned Cuban style, not cutting corners. In business, time is money, especially if you come from the finance end.
Right.
And tobacco requires a lot of time. It also requires a lot of capital because you have to hold the tobacco, ferment it, grow it, etc. Not a 1, 2, 3 process. Very time consuming, but it pays back. And it's you can't take shortcuts, otherwise you start suffering quality. And we don't do that in our business. But part of our culture is to let the tobacco have everything it requires. It speaks to you. It tells you when it's needed. You don't push it. You don't rush it. And it's very important to get that full flavor and aroma and the complexity of the leaf that Nicaragua offers to give it all it takes. So that to us is very important and above all, number one. So that's how it kind of came about. We got started selling leaf and I met Pedro Martin. Pedro Martin, apart from founder of Tropical Tobacco, a great gentleman, connoisseur of cigars from way back when, he in Cuba, had his own factory and very knowledgeable fellow. And in the U.S., he was very successful in the tobacco business. So he had a leaf broker business on the side, and he loved our material and the stuff we were doing. So he started representing me in some of the sales in Dominican Republic, etc. And then he decided to retire. He was in his 80s, and he called me out of the blue and said, "Eduardo, you're the man to take this over." He says, "Pedro, just enough busy here in Nicaragua with the land and the growing side." But he said, you're the man, you know, to put it all together. So I was lucky enough to have a cousin, Paul Palmer, who's the president of the company. And he was open to the idea and had the knowledge of tobacco that at that time I was not privy to in terms of American tobacco trademarks and flavors, etc. So based on him and, you know, having the person, because I said, you know, my job is fully in Nicaragua. I cannot be in both places. So I need somebody in the States to handle that side. So that's how having the person, I said yes to Pedro, no?
Right.
And he stayed with us for like 4 or 5 years. He's very collaborative and very knowledgeable fellow. It was a great experience. No, I was lucky to know him and teach me some, you know, some matters of tobacco, no?
Right. And at the same time, you were still very much in a learning phase on the tobacco and the growing, right? So you
right.
Because it seemed like it happened very quickly that you were able to take these farms and turn them into some of the most, you know, sought after tobacco in the world very quickly, you know, and how did that about?
Like I said, these old hands from Cuba, no, from right. Vuelta Abajo. And these fellows, you know, basically from the age of 15, grew in the tobacco field. Their father and grandfather were living in the same house in these little farmsteads. And that's the Cuban tobacco culture. You know, it goes back 300-400 years that the ancestors back, you know, when started and they never let go. So the knowledge and experience and respect and you know, how they give their life to the leaf, to me was very important. They were also cover leaf growers. Cover leaf growers are like the major leagues. It's like playing for the Yankees.
Right.
One is to grow sun grown, et cetera. But when you grow cover leaf, you have to be very good at it. You repeat it, you know, year in, year out, because it's an expensive investment and process. And if you don't produce cover leaf, you know, you soon fail.
Yeah.
So I was lucky to be able to get some of these old hands. To me, it was also very, you know, interesting because being Cuban, et cetera, was, got me again into the Cuban culture. Because my dream is still is to go back to Cuba, but obviously I cannot. If it opens up, et cetera, I would definitely go back and do tobacco there as well. So it all worked very much in hand. My vision has always been to do things the old-fashioned way. Tobacco has been done for hundreds of years, no? So I'm not a gimmicky person of doing new things or trying new leaves from different places and combinations. I'm very traditionalist in that sense. I experiment and we do things, but basically in the old fashioned way, you know? I still remember one time I was taken to a Robaina farm and I had already met him and talked to him many times, but I went with Arsenio, who's very important in my life as well, and the tobacco, just as Pedro Martin. And we found him finally in the smokehouse and it was like 6:30 in the afternoon, dusk. And he said, no, he was very good friends with Arsenio. He says, Arsenio, I tried this year a new little thing and I'm trying to see how it looks. And this fellow, you know, world famous, 80 some years old, was still trying, you know, something different or new within, you know, the same leaf, the same seed, et cetera, and the same tradition, but trying to see if he could do it better. And that, you know, impresses me a lot. No? So it always stayed in my mind, that little detail. No? You can always improve. You can always do things better. And you have to be open to that experience. And you have to look for it. No, and also listen to people. I have some of my Cuban hands have given me some of the great ideas that we put in place. Great ideas that I give them credit for. I say, you know, Sabito taught me this, or Jacinto mentioned that, or Arsenio did this. Because they deserve the credit. No, I have no problem in that regard. And it's things that I appreciate and that we put in place, and it makes us better.
And you mentioned Arsenio. Did you meet him on those on that trip to Cuba?
No, I went back several times. And at the beginning, I sold a lot of my crop to Canary Islands, which they made tobacco there to compete with the Cubans, you know, for the Spanish market and European market. And there I met the second largest buyer of Cuban tobacco back then. First was a fellow from Belgium named Metaphor. And this fellow's named Socorro. He bought a lot of Cuban tobacco through times, no? And he was a broker. And they helped me buy and distribute in Europe my bales that I was producing then. And he told me about Arsenio. And he said, you have to go to Cuba and you have to meet this fellow. This fellow is, you know, out of this world. He's, you know, world class. And he's basically sitting at home. You know, he was driving a bicycle. He didn't even have a car for the fellow. And at one time, he was in charge of all the fermentation in Pinar del Rio. You know, one of these, I wouldn't call him superhuman, but, you know, a fellow very complete, and very noble, and very knowledgeable. So I was able to bring him on early, like in 1991. And he was extremely helpful to, he passed away a couple of years ago. He was a great blender. He knew our stuff in and out. And he was a peasant, but a peasant self-educated, wrote beautifully, a very, very kind individual, and also, you know, very, very complete.
Yeah, a lot. I mean, like I said, everyone, I know when he passed away, it was a very sad day for a lot of people in the industry. Mm-hmm. He was just so well-respected.
Right.
Sure.
These people, they're not replaceable, unfortunately.
Yeah. No? Yeah. Yeah. You know, I was just, it was funny. I just had a talk with my son. I said, you know, he was having a problem at work. I said, be careful because you may be replaceable. And I'm thinking, well, maybe there's a few exceptions of people not being replaceable. And that's certainly very hard. Arsenio is certainly one for sure, I can think of. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So much knowledge, so much know how, no?
Yeah. Let's turn to the tobacco. And you kind of mentioned that you were really a lot of old school when it comes to tobacco. Is that why, like, the Aganorsa Farms have so much focused on Corojo 99 and Criollo 98? Because those are the tobaccos you're really known for.
Right. No, these are the two Cuban seeds. The originals were Corojo and Criollo, but because of the blue mold, et cetera, they were wiped out. They were not disease resistant. So Cuba took many years, developed the Corojo 99 and the Criollo 98. They went to the Havana 2000, the Havana 92, and different hybrids, but they didn't quite do the job until the Criollo and Corojo came on the scene. So I have no problem, you know, borrowing the seed or using it because it transmits the Cuban flavor to me in the best way. It may not have the best yield. It may not be as resistant as other new hybrids that are done. But to me, tobacco is all about flavor and aroma, especially flavor. Flavor is extremely important. And sometimes some of these new hybrids that they're coming out, to me, are not top quality, you know?
Right.
Tobacco, Pedro Martin and Arsenio taught me, cannot dominate. A blend is a mixture of great, beautiful things that come together and make it even more beautiful and expressive. But you cannot have one leaf that dominates. You cannot smoke something and say, hey, this has this, because it, you know, the signature's on there and it's dominant. It cannot be dominant. Some tobaccos in some countries have that weakness. That's a weakness because you notice and you say, oh, this tobacco, you know, you can taste it, it's this. To me, a blend should not be that way. It should be so well blended that in itself it's a new product, no? But nothing dominates. So Nicaragua, in that sense, same as Cuba, has that unique quality, you know, as well as blending. You can blend and you blend all day, just Nicaraguan tobacco. And the Corojo and the Criollo seed lend itself to that. We grow in the three traditional areas, which is Jalapa, Condega, and Esteli. And within all three, we can make hundreds of blends. It's incredible. And each one is unique and special to us. So it's one of the, I would say, the blessings of Nicaragua, land and people.
Right. So with these two seeds in different regions combined with different primings, this is how you get all those permutations of what you're what you come up with,
We have seven farms in Jalapa, no? Mm-hmm. But each farm we divide in lots. Some farms could have 7-8 lots, and they smoke differently. You learn to differentiate them, and obviously we kept them separate. So all those things, you know, in the end make a blend. You know, some are better than others. You know, none are bad, but some are just, you know, out of this world. And blend very well with other things, so that's part of the blending art, no? So we pay a lot of attention to smoking the actual tobacco, the primings in the lots, to make sure they're where they should be. Because every year, obviously, nature plays a game on you, and the human hand does as well. Tobacco are touched over 300 times by human hands. So errors are committed, mistakes are made, and quality is never, regained. When you lose quality, it's lost. It's not something that you can fix. It's not mechanical. It's not it's a living organism that, is, let's say, transforming. And that transformation is extremely important. But once you lose a certain aspect of it, it's lost. So you have to be very cognizant of that.
Yeah, for sure. Now, one thing that I always found is kind of like Aganorsa has this secret sauce in some of their blends has been the Medio Tiempo. And it seems like when it comes to your farms, Eduardo, Medio Tiempo, you guys have mastered, I know you guys don't get a lot of yield on it, but you've been able to kind of, I think, master getting that leaf. What have you been able to do maybe to be successful with getting Medio Tiempo, even in the small yield you may get?
Well, it's basically produced by Criollo and in the Esteli region where the dirt is, it's a lot heavier.
Right.
We don't produce many of it. We produce like 50 bales. It's not that much, funny enough, because it has to be very thick. You almost call it like crocodile skin.
Right.
And funny enough, we didn't use to pick on it. We used to just throw it in as Ligero, unbeknownst to us. And one of our big customers or our biggest customer said, hey, we don't want this leaf, this coarse leaf, take it out. So we started separating. And then, again, I was taught, because I was not born with this knowledge, that's medio tiempo, or maduro, they also call it.
Right.
And it smokes different. Incredibly, it has a certain gravitas. It anchors a blend, gives it a certain heaviness, which is not replaceable, because sometimes we run out and we try to use Ligero and it's just not the same. Incredible. It's a distant cousin, even though they're very close.
Yeah, so it was someone in
India. That has a special flavor. I call it gravitas,
Yeah.
You can, feel it. And some of our customers like it very much.
Yeah, there was one person who was telling me that they had used it. And then they tried to substitute the Ligero, and they said it wasn't even close, is what they said.
No, it's totally different. That was a surprise to me as well, but that's the way it is.
Yeah.
It's a unique leaf.
Exactly. But it's made you've been able to do some great blends with it. So I enjoy it. I could tell you that. It just, and for folks who don't know, that's the highest, it's a higher priming than Ligero on the plant, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. The highest. But again, it doesn't come often. Mm-hmm. Okay. It's a unique leaf in itself because of its coarseness and its taste. And the taste is similar. Once you put it all together, no?
Yeah.
So that's how we came about, no? We separate. Same on the lower primings. We separate what's called in Cuba the volado, no? The very low priming. They mix it in with the seco, but it should be separate. In Cuba, they don't use that in their factories. Here, they just put it all together. No, we separate it because for blending, it's very important to have the right leaf in that bale. Not have one that's a little bit off, because otherwise your blend will be a little off. And that very low priming has, I call it like a mule's kick. Sometimes it comes to bite you.
Right.
And you don't want that in your leaf, no? So our seco is very, we separate. Like I say, I don't think almost anybody does it, but we do, because we're very much into blending, no? And to us, it should be separated. We follow Cuba in that tradition. They do it. No?
Right. Yeah, no, that's very true. When you actually do the primings, do you go by each priming level, or is it just you group Ligero, Seco, Viso, or do you like go?
No, the leaf gives all the different primings, no?
Right.
But then when we sort it, it's very detail oriented. When you cut, you have to put the priming down. Obviously, the seed, we put the farm and the lot, and obviously the region. So all that knowledge we have, and we keep it right to the bale. The bale will tell you, what cutting, what priming, from what farm, from what lot. It's very important for blending prospects, no? So if it's cutting number 4, cutting number 3, it's very important. Now, sometimes a cutting number three can produce seco and can produce viso, as we call it in Nicaragua. So we separate, you know, even though it's cutting number three, it could be a seco or it could be a viso, depending on the coarseness of the leaf and the strength that's represented. So it's very important. You read the leaf. The leaf tells you everything. But again, you need that knowledge to be able to sort. No, our people have, you know, 18, 20 years experience or even more. No,
yeah,
doing this type of labor. It's very intensive. The knowledge is very important. That's why you can't grow tobacco anywhere. You know, in Cuba now they grow in different places, which is a big mistake. But they have to take people from Vueltabao to different regions to show them how to do it, because they don't know how. And that knowledge has to be transmitted. It just can't be learned in a book or in a lecture.
Very true. Yeah, absolutely. I absolutely agree. And like I said, I don't know much compared to, you know, what you would know. And, but yeah, I would agree with that statement. You made, like I said, there's a lot of great cigars you've worked on that Corojo 99, Criollo 98. When it's come to Maduro, for a long time you were using San Andreas, and it's now only recently that you have started to use some of your own leaf as Maduro. What
right.
took so long to kind of do that? When you've, you know, I know you've done great things with San Andreas, but it's only recently that you've kind of now started using your own leaf for Maduro.
Right, it's shade grown Corojo in Jalapa, but from an upper cutting, cutting number four, cutting number five. It just took like 20 years for the land to be able to produce that type of leaf that would burn properly and perform its duty. And it's a very unique taste and strength. So it just happened by, you know, a lot of effort and time and dedication, because every year we put back into the land different elements to make it better, to get it back to its original state, let's call it. No, it had been mistreated during the revolution and thereafter by other people that used it. So it took a long time to bring it back to its old glory, let's call it that way.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned, though, that and that's something that you've obviously experimented with, and, you know, you've just started to roll those out right now. Are there any other leaves that you're any other seeds maybe you're experimenting with, or maybe one? And we're seeing folks try to grow Nicaraguan broadleaf. There's other Corojo varietals. Is there anything else you're looking at right now? Maybe it's
yes. Something this year, I went to Cuba a couple of years ago, and I asked to smoke from the smokehouse some tobacco that had been fermented at a friend's very important fellow. I don't want to mention, but one of the most recognized fellows in Cuba. And I asked them for Corojo 2010 and 2012, if I could smoke it. I don't know if you're familiar, but I call them reefers, you know, little smokes.
Yeah.
That we do with a particular, just a cutting from a particular land or something. And it tells us a lot about the tobacco. And we use that accordingly. So I said, you know, just to make a little reefer, I call it reefer because it come back from the 1960s. And smoke it. So we smoked it. Arsenio was with me. He was already sick, but he was in Cuba. And Jacinto, and we smoked the two cigars. I mean, the two little reefers. And we liked the 2012 very much. It was very much in our realm of taste. The 2010, in my estimation, our estimation, was a little bit bronco, a little bit wild. Maybe it wasn't fermented properly or who knows, no? So we chose 2012. Just recently, I had some leaf brought from Cuba to retest it. Reefers from there that I asked on the two varietals. And again, you know, our estimation as 2000 was right on. And they're using it in Cuba. They use both 2012 and 2010. But to us, in our flavor profile, 2012 seemed to hit the mark. So we planted quite a bit this year, and the field it behaved very, very well. So we're very much excited about it. But again, we have to taste it, and you know, after fermentation, to know its full value. But it's very promising. So it'll be hopefully a new leaf that we'll be able to use in our blending stable.
What kind of profile does that?
You have to keep up with the times. So.
Yeah.
What kind of profile does that Crojo 12 have?
It's a little more refined. In terms of cover leaf, it seems to provide more of the Cohiba look, you know, that okay. Light walnut type color, which is very sought after mm-hmm. and kind of hard to get because you get it from a lower priming. So we're very excited about it. And nice. Again, you know, we'll have to see how it interplays with the 99 and the 98. In fact, this year as well, I got a refresher seed from Cuba and then Corojo 99, which I also planted. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking to compare that with the old Corojo 99 that I've used for the last, you know, 8-10 years. So that'll also be interesting. Everything has to be smoked. Aaron, you're smoking there.
Yeah.
Smoking in the end tells you what's good or not right. so good.
Yep.
And it's the flavor mostly that, you know, whether it does, you know, the nice effect. Mm-hmm. So we're very excited, but it's going to be something new for us and, you know, give us like a couple new toys to play with.
Yeah. That's awesome. How long does it take for like to bring that into a blend? Do you have to go through a few crops or is it just kind of a trial and error to see at one point when it's ready?
No, once the tobacco is planted and grown, let's say at the stage we're in now, we're collecting from the smokehouses and still some is being cut. That'll take about a year plus to be fermented. The Ligero takes probably a year and a half. You know, the Seco and the lower primings take less, you know, because it's a thinner leaf. So it'll take probably about a year plus, and then we'll start testing or tasting it. No,
right.
I mean we taste it along the way, but it's not ready until it's ready. So until it's ready, you can't really smoke. The rest is just, you know you're on track to something, but you don't know exactly where, no, until you get there.
Very good. Aaron, is there anything else you had on the tobacco or the agricultural end of things that we want to cover?
No, I think you hit it there.
Okay, great. Eduardo, are the farms, do you have other agricultural businesses on these farms besides tobacco, or are they strictly dedicated to tobacco?
No, strictly dedicated to tobacco. When you plant tobacco, you can't regrow anything else.
There. Right.
You don't really plant anything. If anything, just beans or something to add to the soil nutrients
sure.
and help the structure. So it lays fallow. No, we don't run cattle there or anything. It's just strictly for tobacco. So tobacco land is kept, you know, the best condition possible. Lately, I've been using a bean that Torrents in Mexico, where I buy the Mexican cover leaf, gave me this bean seed. And it grows like a huge carpet, this thick, and adds nitrogen to the soil. It kills all the weeds. So we're using that, and it helps like protect the soil, you know, and add nutrients and kill the weeds, you know, that would grow otherwise, because it doesn't let anything else grow.
Right. Exactly.
So we're using that as a you know, a way to rest the soil. So our other things are grown somewhere else in different land, different areas, not at all in the same. They don't mix.
Right. Understood. Totally understood there. And that's good news for us as cigar enthusiasts for sure.
Right.
Right.
No, these are lands that are unique. They should be protected. No, not to grow something else on. And that's an aftercrop. No?
Yeah. Very true. Yeah. For a while, we mentioned Tabacalera Tropical, but for a while you had offset some production to Honduras, mm-hmm. where you were making stuff at Races Cubanas. What went into, why were you making stuff at Honduras for, I mean, I think you still make some stuff there, but why were you doing, it seemed like you were doing a lot of stuff at Honduras a few years ago.
Okay. Go back in history. With Pepin Garcia, no? You know him?
Yep.
Okay. He started with me, no?
Yes.
And we started Rey de los Habanos in Miami, this and that. Then he asked to come to Nicaragua and take over the factory that I had. So I gave him that opportunity. When that happened, I said, sometimes in marriages, they're not the, how would I say, the best relationships. They have to be, you know, eliminate little minor irritants. So one to me seemed that we should not make our own brands or our own private labels under that same factory, because we would be competing with Rey de los Habanos. No, Rey de los Habanos was a separate entity where we were partners and had its own unique business. And Tropical was something I had bought from Pedro Martin long before and had its own trademarks, etc. So in order to eliminate possible frictions, I decided to go to Raíces Cubana, take the blends, take my tobacco, and have Tropical blends done at Raíces. So I basically, you know, separated one from the other. It wasn't accepted totally, but I said, that's the way it has to be. Raíces was a buyer of tobacco from me for maybe 10 years or 8 years or whatever. And they were very good at making cigars and quality cigars. So we took our blends there. We showed them what we wanted, and we gave them the actual leaf. And because obviously our leaf is very important. It's very important to the blends. In fact, sometimes he run out and he says, Eduardo, I can't find another leaf that smokes like yours. So he'd be, you know, up in arms saying, I have to stop production because there's no other, you know, Ligero or Seco I can find that, you know, has your same flavor. So that's how it all came about. You know, we moved to there and we worked with them for quite a few years. No? Then as time went by, I said, let's create our own factory again. And then we brought back most of our stuff, and we still do things with them. But most of it was brought back.
Right. And when that was after the partnership with Pepin dissolved, that you went back there? Was that pretty much when that happened?
Yeah, pretty much so.
Let me ask
you. In tobacco, you have to be, from my perspective, you have to be vertically integrated.
Right.
One of the first things I saw when I entered the business from the farming side, that you had to grow your own tobacco. You couldn't, you know, sometimes people finance other people to grow their tobacco. But I find that sometimes it's at odds and you don't know exactly what you have.
Right.
They may tell you what it is, but it may not be exactly true. So to me, the areas that are important or key in business, you should control, because they're your destiny. And in tobacco, there are certain things that are very important, is to know exactly what you have in your hands when you make a blend. And the quality and the fermentation was done correctly, and that it's the correct seed and all these things. Because you're making, you know, thousands and hundreds of thousands of tobacco that supposedly include this blend or include these leaves. And if they're not correct, if they're not true, you're not going to get the product that you wanted at the beginning. No? So it's very important to control the processes in tobacco from my perspective. So it took me like a year to learn that, because I noticed that when I finance people, they did things a little bit different than I expected. And yet I was already, you know, on the boat, you know, out in the sea, and I had to accept what they would give me. They had a different culture of how to grow things. Like one thing I learned at first in Nicaragua, the Nicaraguans, they use guns and irrigate the tobacco from above. In Cuban style, you irrigate from below, so the leaf is actually not touched, just at the very, you know, beginning stage. If you keep, you know, using sprinklers and irrigating, it's much easier, but you're washing the damn leaf. You're washing the natural oils and many other things that are important in tobacco. And you end up with a leaf that could almost be, you know, a banana leaf. And not literally, but, you know, what I'm saying, it's washed. Right. It's not proper. So all these things, all these details are extremely important. So to us, the leaf is everything, and the fermentation is extremely important. And it has to be done correctly. It can't be pushed. It can't be, no shortcuts can be taken, because it's not the same.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Was Arsenio, did he play a big role in terms of the fermentation, like you know, mastering the fermentation?
Was a master fermentation.
Yeah,
he used to ferment the Cohiba leaves. And he was, you know, from the very beginning, helped choose the lots and all that. And he was in charge of all the fermentation in Pinal del Rio, which was, you know, huge. We're like Lilliputians next to Pinal del Rio.
Right.
And they're just huge tons of tobacco. And he was in charge of all that. So he's extremely knowledgeable, a very thoughtful person, and very much in the Cuban tradition of old.
Yeah, that's your thing.
He had a great palate. The palate is
absolutely
unique. It's very important. You find people sometimes that they can't taste, and you can't teach them to taste. There's something as elemental as that. Some people just don't have it. He had just an exquisite palate, same as Pedro Martin. I mean, they're unique individuals in that regard.
And you mentioned Pedro Martin, but you mentioned that you have the portfolio of his brand still, right? So those blends are all predicate. So that's a big advantage because that company was around a long time.
Right. Yeah. We have a lot of trademarks that are very useful.
Yeah, we got asked. Someone asked about Particularis, which is the one that you sell through Sindicato. People were asking about that one. Yeah.
They asked us for the trademark, and we reached an agreement with them that they could use it, and we make a great cigar for them. They're very happy with it.
Yeah, that's all Nicaraguan Puro, that cigar. Yeah, it's a good cigar. And we were talking about the factory. So you have, the Topsa factory is the your factory in Nicaragua, but you also have you have another factory up in Jalapa, correct?
Yes, the Jalapa one we just recently closed, and we opened it in Esteli in another location.
Oh, okay.
We make a lot of cigars for Spain.
Uh-huh.
Almost 3 million cigars for Spain. Spain and Europe. Like I say, I've always been close to Europe and used to competing with the Cuban cigars with our tobacco. Huh?
Yeah.
We have a trademark that's ours called Condega, and it does extremely well all through Europe.
You guys, I've seen that one at the trade show a few times, that cigar. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
So they've done an extremely good job. And last year, we produced almost 3 million cigars for them.
Yeah.
And to sell that many cigars in Europe against the Cubans is not easy, let me tell you.
Yeah.
But our tobacco and the blend and their salesmanship has done a great job in that regard.
Yep. And then you have a factory in Miami as well, the Casa Fernandez.
Yeah, we have a little one in Miami.
Yeah.
It's kind of an idea to use Cuban rollers and also to have it close to the vest.
Yeah.
To any bottlenecks or anything, or people come and visit. So we have a small little factory, but done very Cuban. Only have one. A fellow that bunches and rolls in the Cuban style. No, they're all Cubans that came from the island, and that's what they did in one of the factories there.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have a little bit of everything.
Now, for a long time, I've smoked the Casa Fernandez cigars before the rebranding, and I still do. And I remember when Terrence came on board, he kind of referred to you guys as the sleeping giant out there, because a lot of us were smoking the Casa Fernandez. We knew what these cigars were about. But why did that take so long maybe for people to realize what you guys were doing, not just at your farms, but with the cigars you were producing?
Well, I think Terrence helped a lot. And my son Max also came into the picture, and together they developed the Aganorsa leaf concept, because we got a little bit lost there with Casa Fernandez. And everybody always asks, what's Aganorsa mean? What's Aganorsa's all about? Why do you mention Aganorsa? So coming through with the Aganorsa leaf concept kind of like brought it all together, no? Terrence has also done a great job, and obviously our tobacco also speaks for itself. Every year we get better, and our blends also are very good. The Lunatic line, now the Supreme Leaf, the Torch, all our products are doing very well. They have a good launch, and they keep being repeated and asked for. So now we're known. Before, we were not as known.
Right.
Unfortunately, but it's hard to crack that nut. It takes time.
Yeah, no, it does. But, a lot of people knew of stuff going on in your factory. And one thing that I always kind of found that your factories did really well is you kind of had a lot of this new talent coming in. And, they've made the most of – it seems like you guys are providing great mentorship, and they're making the most of that right now. That's something like I would say is a real – that's something when I look at – what your factories do and some of the brands, like, thinking of Dion, is a great example. You guys have, for many years really have mentored these guys along.
Right. No, Dion came on early, in fact, Pete Johnson brought him to our factory because we knew him when the relationship with with Pepin, etc.
Right.
And he suggested that he come to us. No, so he came here. I mean, from the beginning, he came to us. Very knowledgeable fellow. Very involved. Gets involved heavily and comes every month and a half in the blending and everything else. He knows our tobacco very well. He has also an incredible palate and taste, and is very knowledgeable. So he has helped us a lot, no? And our great tobacco has helped him a lot.
Yeah.
So all the tobacco he makes, we make for him. It's all our tobacco, no? So he's been very good. He brought Nick. Nick, we knew Melillo, and so we've done a few things with him, Mel, Nick, and the Wayuense, the ancient, whatever it's called, I forget now. That just got number 3, I think, this year.
Wise Man, yeah.
Wise Man, exactly.
Yeah. It's, yep.
It's the old man, I call him. And we have Kyle Gellis, which is a young fellow, rising star. He got a high rating this time in the top 25. He's 28 years old. He's very intense, very knows what he wants. You know, again, a unique individual. We have a new fellow coming on, which is Rainier Lorenzo, HVC, who's hitting the road hard and making a name for himself. And he also has a unique quality. We have Viaje, Andre Farkas, keeps up coming with new ideas, new concepts. Thank God we make great blends for him, so we work well together.
He told me about how he drove you guys crazy in the factory with some of his ideas.
Yeah. Andre is a tough individual. But, you know, sometimes great individuals are tough.
You're right, right.
I hate to be his wife. he's a tough cookie. But, you know, he knows what he wants and he fights for it, and you have to respect him for that. And he's very creative, you know?
Yeah.
We also now just, Gurkha just came on board as well. And we made a couple great blends for them. They're very happy. And they've really taken on the Aganorsa name. Now we're coming out with a new one called San Miguel. And they're very happy. And we're very happy with them as well. No? Because they have a great marketing and great commercial side to promote their products.
Yeah. And you've got to be happy about how the rebranding has gone for you.
Things seem to be going well. You got to be happy with that, right? I mean,
right. I think the change really helped a lot. It just was a huge pop in our business. It just brought it all together.
Yeah.
And made people realize and let us carry our message forth and people understand it and, you know, register in the mind, because it was just a great deal of confusion. What's this Aganorsa? What's all about?
Yeah.
Cigar Aficionado has always helped us and been, an ally, not an ally, but I mean, friendly to us in the sense of promoting Nicaraguan tobacco in the first place. And they've always been good to us in Aganorsa, no? They like our tobacco and they speak well of it, and we get a lot of prizes from them. So it's all worked very well, you know, and Terrence has also made it happen. You know, sometimes things come together, you know? The stars line up.
Right.
It's your moment in time, no? Or in history. We're on the grand scene, no? So we're getting there.
Yeah. I mean, I'm smoking the Lunatic torch right now. I love the size that you came out with in this.
Yeah.
And I love the packaging and the banding on this too. It's really, really popular.
It's selling like gangbusters. We made a release now and it's basically sold out.
Yeah. Yeah. But this size, this is like a Toro size. I'm smoking. This is really good.
Right.
I mean, this is like Terrence said tasty. That's like, that's an understatement. It's really good. This cigar, how can I just say it's Aganorsa to the core. Like is what I think of Aganorsa. I think this is really a great representation of that cigar right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Our taste is unique. People can recognize and say Aganorsa taste or whatever. No?
Yeah. I mean, and you know, like I said, what's happening in Nicaragua right now, Nicaragua's become the leading country, and you guys are right at the forefront of that.
Yeah. Yeah, we're happy to be in that group. And Nicaraguan tobacco speaks for itself. It's great tobacco. And Cuba has, not that it's lost its luster, it never will because of the land and the people. But they take too many shortcuts because of economic reasons. And also, they follow the party line. They don't follow the people with knowledge. No? That the politics get involved. So to me, it's not the same as it used to be.
Yeah, I understand that. And you mentioned Max, and Max has really in the last few years, he's emerging as a force now as well on the blending end and what he's doing. I think it's
he's a great blender. He has that natural gift. He picked up on Arsenio and then he's gone from there. I was very worried when Arsenio left us that would leave a huge hole, no?
Yeah.
In terms of our blending capacity, but he just picked up and never looked back. He's also very good in the internet, labeling and creating the trademarks. He created the Lunatic. He helped a lot in obviously in the Aganorsa Leaf relaunch, etc. No, and new things that we're doing. He's very much involved in that end as well. He has that a gift in that side as well.
Very good. Very good. Aaron, do you have anything else for Eduardo?
Sorry, I was on mute. I think you hit it all.
Okay. Eduardo, before we go, can we just kind of talk about what we're smoking with you? We do, like I said, thanks very much for the time, but can we talk about what we're smoking here?
Okay. Well, you're smoking the Torch. The Torch, when you begin, it doesn't have the cover leaf. So you're smoking basically more of a Corojo blend at the very beginning for like a quarter or half an inch. And then the cover leaf comes into effect. So it's a play on, you know, a little bit of smoking a cigar without a cover leaf, without the great Corojo influence, and then with it fully. It's a three-quarter strength blend.
That's what I put it at.
It's representative of our leaf, you know, very tasty. It's well-rounded, complex. It's a good cigar overall. No?
It really is. Like, that three-quarter strength is exactly where I put it at. It's great balance on this, but you get some of that Nicaraguan spice. There's a nice underlying sweetness with it. Neither are aggressive on you.
That's the interplay between the Criollo and the Corojo.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Criollo gives you that spice, and Corojo gives you that sweetness.
Yeah. I had liked the original Torch with the thinner ringage, but I think I like this size better. I like this size.
Yeah,
I got to try the 70. I do like smoking big ringage cigars, so...
Yeah, we have a whole gamut of those, and they sound like gangbusters. We have the 80.
Paul gave me the, I remember Paul gave me the 8x80, and what I liked about that is it had the Bellicoso tip, so I didn't feel like I was smoking the 80 with that.
Right.
Don't get me wrong, it was a
funny enough, I smoke. Hated that because I said this cigar has to be friendly to the mouth.
Right.
We all appreciate it.
it made a big difference. I don't think that would have been the same if I didn't. It wouldn't have been it was much more of a, the smoking experience was just better with that.
Yeah. That cigar surprised me because I thought it would be sold in, you know, specific areas of the country or whatever because of its big size, etc. But I even saw it in Davidoff on Madison Avenue. So that when I saw that, I said, holy shit. I think an 880 would be sold in New York City at top stores.
Yeah,
and it's like I said, I
can't keep it off the table. What we're having now, a lot of successes with the local series.
Yeah,
we created a local 60, a 70, and an 80. The 80 was my idea because you know we make 80s. Let's say you kind of have to hold it with two hands because you can't, you know, put in your mouth and let it sit there. But it's a very tasty cigar. It's got the new Corojo Maduro wrapper, and it's got a full flavor of Aganorsa tobacco, and it's very popular. I'm surprised because it's a perfecto. It's not a volume cigar, but again, we can't keep it off the table, which is great. It's at a value price.
Yeah,
very reasonable for the quality of the tobacco.
Yeah, very true.
And now, what Aaron is smoking, the Supreme Leaf, that just took off like a bandit. We did a release, and it just sold out, and everybody got kind of upset. Come on, I can't get some.
Well, we tried. Kind of left off the list. Terrence led us on a wild goose chase for it, actually.
It's coming back. But again, that took us by surprise. You know, it's totally off on us, the color, the brightness of the tobacco, and, you know, it's a great cigar and it'll do great things for us. So it's good that we can keep coming up with new things that do well. No, it didn't used to be that way sometimes.
Yeah, it's a really smooth cigar. The depth of the wood and the earthy notes to it, really mellow spice. I'd say maybe medium strength in regards to it, but yeah. One of the things I love about Aganorsa tobacco is the really clean finish. Like it doesn't punish your palate where you kind of can taste it for a while, you know, in between draws. And then after you're done smoking the cigar, it's very clean. So, you know, you smoke that cigar and you're like, okay, I'm ready for another cigar. So like, I need to take a little bit of a break to let my palate reset. It's a really, you know, it kind of contains itself to the experience, which is nice.
Yeah, Aaron, we're very cognizant of the taste, like I mentioned, and the flavors to us is extremely important. Two, we don't like dry cigars, and our leaf also provides some are gushers. Actually, Dion says it's like a gusher. Your mouth waters sometimes when you smoke a cigar. What you should never do, he taught me day one, is not have a glass of water on the side, and by the time you finish the cigar, you drank the glass.
Exactly.
Once you're smoking a dry cigar. So we're lucky in that regard that our land and our process does not provide for, you know, very dry cigar.
Yeah, you know, I got to mention one more cigar, which I didn't. And I think one thing that you guys aren't known for this wrapper, but this was a home run in my book. And I normally don't like a bolder Connecticut, but the Aganorsa Leaf Connecticut is one I really like.
Yeah, it's great.
You guys just knocked that one out of the park, in my opinion. I really love that cigar.
Right. Now, there's some stores, some very important stores that love it.
Yeah.
There, we play it off against the Corojo because Connecticut has, you know, a bit of a taste. Wouldn't call it bitter, but, you know, a little bit a specific taste. So with the Corojo, we're able to take that away, you know, and add subtle strength, because obviously Connecticut should not be that strong, because most people that smoke Connecticut are not looking for a strong cigar overall. You know, it'd be a surprise if they get, you know, one that's, you know, I mean, you can do it, but to me, it's not proper, no? Because the smoker that goes for Connecticut is looking for a medium blend, a little bit above, but not super strong, no?
Right.
Same as a Maduro. Maduro should be a strong cigar. I mean, the leaf itself, the darkness and all that represents strength, character, personality. So it should not be a low-end strength cigar, in my opinion, no?
No, I can tell you with the Night Watch, that's a very bold cigar.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, there we use against the Corojo shade grown, no? It made it different.
Yeah, it's really that's got some, but it's got flavor with it too, which is what I really like.
Yeah,
but I didn't. I've had
some
strong.
Guardian has been terrific for us. That was an invention of Max and Kyle, and the dog still exists. In fact, he's in my house right now.
Oh, really?
Upstairs. Because we have dogs that guard the different farms. Not, you know, they're not going to attack you, but they bark and they, you know, they have a scary presence. So based on that, between them and the love of dogs, they decided, when I initially heard the concept, it didn't seem to me to have a ring with a dog, you know, in the face and be called a guardian of the farm. But it worked well from day one. So I never looked back on that either. Keeps being, you know, one of our favorites.
That's great. That's great.
I'm glad you like it.
Yeah, it's like I said, you know, I've had some strong cigars from you guys over the years. But that one was like, wow, that's a strong, that one was very strong. Very good. Very good. Yeah. All right, Eduardo, that wraps up the interview piece. We wanted to thank you very, very much, for being a part of the show. Honor to talk to you. Thanks for all the support you have given us, over the years. We do appreciate that as well. I've gotten to know Terrence and Paul very well over the years. So, they're two great friends and, you know, really, really was an honor to talk to you. So thank you so much.
Okay. Thanks for inviting me and thanks for the support that you've shown, you know, and the interest in Aganorsa. So to both you and Aaron, you know, we're glad to be here and make a presence and tell us about our leaf and what Aganorsa is all about to you.
Yep. I don't want to forget Max either. Yeah, I don't want to forget Max either. Max is also great as well. I've learned a lot from him. Yep. Eduardo, thank you so much for being on the show. Hopefully we'll see you sometime down the road soon.
At the RTDA, unfortunately.
Not this year. Not this year. But please stay safe in Nicaragua for us.
Okay. All right. Same with you.
All right. Thanks again, guy. Thanks again, Eduardo. That's Eduardo Fernandez of Aganorsa Leaf. We're going to do a couple more segments here. Terrence, you going to stick around for us?
Well, if you'll have me, I'll be happy to stick around.
Okay, great. I'm going to do a word from the sponsors first. And I did want to mention what we were smoking tonight is sponsored by Tailored Smoke, located in the heart of downtown Charlotte's epicenter. Tailored Smoke is your one-stop shop for a tailored smoking experience. And now they are open for grab and go at the Charlotte Motor Speedway. So want to, you know, and they're big supporters of Aganorsa Leaf too. So I get a lot of my cigars from them there. Also want to mention Villiger Cigars. Since 1888, Villiger Cigars have been experts in everything tobacco, including offering a wide range of premium cigars for all connoisseurs. Villiger's La Vencedora, which translates to the victor, is the first ever full-bodied Villiger cigar, and it carries a special meaning to Villiger Cigars chairman of board, Heinrich Villiger. The Villiger La Vencedora, or the victor, represents to Mr. Villiger the arrival of to the premium handmade cigar segment. It was time, in his opinion, to push the envelope and create a legacy cigar that will serve as a proper follow-up to the highly acclaimed Villiger La Floridian Clan brand. This Nicaraguan Puro, wrapped in a beautiful Nicaraguan Habano Oscuro wrapper, boasts a full-bodied smoking experience featuring highly seasoned and hearty flavors. Be sure to ask your retailer for La Vencedora, and you can visit Villiger's entire line of premium cigars at www.villigercigars.com. And by JRE Tobacco. The authentic Corojo leaf is one of the most robust and flavorful leaves out there. During the golden age of cigars in Cuba, it was a leaf of choice to make some of the world's greatest cigars. Because it is one of the most challenging ones to cultivate, it fell out of favor by the 1990s. In the Jamestown Valley of Honduras, Julio Arroyo took on the challenge of growing Corojo from the original seeds, and in 2000, he reintroduced authentic Corojo back to the market. With over 50 years' experience in the tobacco business, from growing and curing tobacco to cigar production, the JRE Tobacco Farm has been able to continue to deliver products to market with authentic Corojo. Now with JRE Tobacco, Julio and his son Justo bring their very own brand to market, each containing the authentic Corojo leaf. Tatascamo is a mild to medium cigar in both Connecticut and Habano Wrapper. Rancho Luna is a premium medium cigar available in Habano and Maduro. And Aladino is available in a 100% authentic Corojo Puro, San Andres Maduro, and Ecuadorian Connecticut shade. Representing the golden age of cigars in Cuba from 1947 to 1961. Now available at your local retailer, be sure to ask for JRE Tobacco, a legacy that is tasted in every drawer. And by Toscano Cigars, as rustic and strong as the people who smoke them, try Toscano's rustic and full-bodied flavors and aromas. Made in Italy with 100% dark fire-cured tobacco from the United States and Italy, it's one of the best-selling cigars in the world. Toscano Cigars are the perfect combination of American and Italian craftsmanship. Whether in the traditional long format or in the short format Toscanella, Toscano Cigars are dry-cured, handmade, and fire-cured for your enjoyment anytime, anywhere. Visit your local premium cigar retailer today and look for Toscano Cigars today. And by A.J. Fernandez Cigars. A.J. Fernandez's New World brand is named in honor of the discovery of tobacco by Christopher Columbus's expedition in 1492. A.J. collaborated with his father, Ishmael, on the cigar, which is comprised of a wrapper from Nicaragua that covers binder from the Lapa Valley over a filler blend of Ometepe, Condega, and Esteli tobaccos. The core line debuted in 2014, which was followed by New World Connecticut, New World Puro Especial, and New World Cameroon. All four blends are able to captivate the palate of any cigar smoker. If you're beginning to discover the fine world of premium handmade cigars, New World Connecticut's for you. If you're into the rich full body blends, Puro Especial's for you. And if you're into complex flavors, New World Cameroon is for you. If you're into robust and earthy flavors with notes of espresso, the New World Oscuro is definitely for you. Visit www.ajfcigars.com to learn more. And by Embombay Cigars. Embombay Cigars represent the most admired cigar culture of Cuba. They select the best of the quality tobacco to use in the aging process. Embombay Cigars are rolled in Costa Rica by some of the world's most experienced cigar rolls, giving it a unique smoking experience. The band portrays the detailed and artistic nature of our small industry. Try Embombay and the Gaia line. Embombay Cigars, where a cigar is a way of life. And by Alec Bradley. Alec Bradley, Alec Bradley, Alec Bradley, Alec Bradley, Alec Bradley. Visit alecbradley.com to find out more about their cigars, Live True. And we're going to get into our Alec Bradley Live True segment, of course, sponsored by Alec Bradley. We take a little break from the hardcore cigar talk here, and we get into just things that maybe talk about in the cigar lounge. And I think this weekend, Aaron, it was a grilling weekend, right?
Yes.
For a lot of us. And I was kind of curious, just kind of going around, like when people grill, what kind of grills do people use? So I'll kind of start off with our guests if they want to tell us what kind of grill they use. Terrence, you're in a high rise, so it's kind of tricky, I guess.
I'm more of an eater. Like I eat the food that's grilled. That's yeah. more my thing. And right. So there's a lot of guys in the industry who are doing amazing, you know, Carney obviously, and my buddy Brian McGee. He does a tri-tip, which is outstanding. So I'm more of a person that likes to eat the food that people put on the grill.
How about you, Aaron? All right, Eduardo, do you use a grill?
Yeah, quite a bit. Vegetables and meat, obviously.
Right. Do you use like a charcoal grill or an electric grill or a gas grill?
Yeah, wood or charcoal. The old traditional.
Yep. Yeah. How about you, Aaron?
I have three. I have a gas grill. I have an electric smoker. And I also have a Weber kettle that I've added a smoker attachment to. So I can do, you know, charcoal grilling or I could do smoking on there with wood or charcoal. So just depending on the job is what I'll go to.
Okay. My wife won't let me get a gas grill because she's very worried about propane around the house for whatever reason. So I have the old standby with charcoal, but I just purchased an electric infrared grill.
Okay.
I'm not familiar what this infrared is going to do, except my wife's bought it for me, so it's coming. So I have no idea what it's going to do, but but the charcoal is a little bit of a pain sometimes, particularly when you have to clean it up afterwards, unfortunately.
The food you were cooking looked pretty delicious.
That was the Cattle Baron burgers from Montana. I could that meat. So that meat came from the Cattle Baron guys at Montana.
Nice.
And we bought some really good chicken with it. I'm not known for culinary, but I guess by default, the man barbecue or grills. So that's kind of like my role. So the problem is now I was told I have to cut back on red meat by the doctor.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, I won't get into that, but I'm sure if Abe's listening, he's going to be giving me a lecture. But yeah, but I was told I have to cut back. I was told this last week. So, this could lead to bad things is what they said. But they didn't say I had to give it up, which is good.
Moderation.
Yeah. So do you, what kind of foods, Terrence, do you like on, as an eater, what do you like on that, on a grill?
You know, whatever you do that you do well, usually that's what I'll say to somebody is, you know, if you do a mean tri-tip like McGee, well, that's what I want to eat. If you do, hot dogs and hamburgers, if that's your forte, then I'm good. I'm mostly very appreciative if I'm not cooking. So if you're the one that's putting the food together and it's, usually that's what you do well and that's what I enjoy eating. Have you ever had tri-tip? I never even had it until McGee.
I haven't. I'm going to be honest. I don't think I've had it now that you're saying that.
I guess it's a big West Coast thing. But
it is. It's a big California thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Why is it a California thing? Is there any reason?
I just think that the butchers out here, you know, kind of, I think they came up with the cut and then it just kind of grew out here. So there's various areas that have like kind of specialties in how they make it and things like that. So like Santa Maria is a big thing. So I think it's just a different cut that is more popular out here.
Aaron, tell me about these smokers that you have. Cause you seem like I know very little about the smokers.
Yeah. So, I mean, with a smoker, you're just mainly looking for indirect cooking. So you're not going to put the meat over the heat source. So it's going to be away from the heat. There's many ways to do it. Electric smokers you can use, which are, it's like also like a mini fridge kind of a setup, and you have multiple racks in there, and it's just an electric kind of heating element towards the bottom, and you can add wood to that to kind of create the smoke. It's not as if you try something out of an electric smoker versus out of a wood or a charcoal smoker, it's not going to be exactly the same, but you can get kind of close. But otherwise, you're going to use something where you have kind of a smoke box where you have the heat coming from there and the wood that's you're smoking from. And the heat is transferring from that area to the area that's further away where you have the meat at. So if you're doing briskets or whatever that way, that's typically the way you set it up. And a lot of the fun is trying out, different ways to do it. So different, if you use charcoal briquettes or if you use like lump charcoal, and then the type of wood that you use for the smoking is a big deal as well. So, everybody's heard of like hickory or mesquite, but you can use like apple or cherry or alder or olive. There's any number of woods that you can use to do the smoking, and some of the different woods work better with different types of meat. So If you're doing like poultry or something like that, you don't want to use an aggressive wood like a hickory or a mesquite, because it'll kind of overpower the chicken or the turkey or whatever you're doing. So you want to go with kind of a lighter wood. But if you're doing beef or something like that, or pork, you can go a little bit more aggressive on the wood.
I've noticed that smokers tend to, the people that smoke food tend to be very particular about what wood or how to do it.
Yeah.
And they seem to judge, they judge you a lot if you don't use it the way that they think you should.
I think it's the same way with anything. Like, you know, there are certain people that have very strict thoughts on how things should be done, but really you get I think the fun of it is experimenting, you know, trying different woods and things like that to kind of find out what flavors you like. So I think it's just like cigars, you know, you do what you like, and if other people have a complaint about it, they don't have to eat it, I guess. So I think you just do what you want to do and see what you like, and that works. But yeah, there's some people that are you know, brutal, really strict into what you think you should be doing with it.
So smoking meats should be a judgment-free activity.
Absolutely. Yep. If you like the taste, smoke it however you want. That's how I see it.
I like the way you think.
Yeah. Yeah. It was interesting because, you know, you were mentioning those, what I had in that picture, Terrence, like those steaks were like basically trimmings of like skirt steak trimmings, right? That we just threw on there, right? For the hell of it, right? Just because we had them, and like, well, we just like looking to clear out the freezer and stuff. And they actually, with the indirect heat, they came out pretty good, actually.
Looked pretty good.
I said, I was surprised. I wasn't expecting much from it. It was figured it was gonna be burgers or chicken was like going to be the plan with that. So, yeah, I mean, and like I said, I'm pretty traditional. I like burgers. I like sausage, the Tony Soprano sausages on the grill. I call them, I haven't had a panic attack and passed out, but, like he did, but,
yeah.
So that was interesting. I actually want, as long as we got Terrence on here, Aaron, right. Yep. And I'm going to mention a cattle baron meat moment. Terrence, you took an unfair pounding. Okay. And I want to clear the air on this, on that cheesesteak. Because I don't think we've
still haven't gotten over this, to be honest.
Let me make this clear. Terrence went to a top five cheesesteak place in Philadelphia. Steve's Prince of Steaks would be on a list I would recommend to anybody on the short list to go to. It's not necessarily number one, but it's in my top five. So I want it clear that Terrence didn't just go seek out a very bad cheesesteak here. And regardless of what the picture looked like, Terrence, that was a very good cheesesteak.
It was cyberbullying at its worst, I thought. You know,
yeah.
I was all happy. I went to a couple local guys at a shop were like, hey, we want to take you to one of the best places you can get a cheesesteak.
Oh, it is, yeah.
And you know, I thought it was delicious, and I had a great time. And, you know, I post the picture, and I didn't take, you know, that much effort to, you know, really take a great picture of it. And and I've never heard the end of it, ever. So it's very upsetting.
Yeah, the problem was, and I'll defend the dojo guys a little. They went to John's Roast Pork, which I would put number one on the list, to be honest. It doesn't look like much of a place, but it is really good. But I'll just say, however that picture came out, I'm not going to judge it. Because I bet it was a good cheese. Because, again, they didn't do you wrong. You went to, like I said, what I would consider a top five place in Philadelphia. And people could argue this one's better than that. But I don't think anyone would put Steve's as, like, don't go to Steve's or anything like that.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. I was like coming from every direction.
It's still a topic of discussion a year later. I'm like,
I need sleeping pills to go to bed at night.
Right.
Because right. of how upset I was after the berating that went on after
I have
from people that I thought were my friends. I thought they were my friends. I don't know.
Look, they're good guys. They know their cheesesteaks. But they have not, in fairness, I don't know if they've been to Steve's. And I haven't been to Steve's in probably about 2 or 3 years, maybe 3 years at least, but I guess it's a place I would certainly go to. And I can't judge the picture is all I'm going to say. Sometimes I've had food at places, sometimes that don't photograph well either. And I'm not even faulting you for taking the picture. So I'm going to have you back on this one then. But it was a good cheesesteak. That's a, you know,
it was great, man. It was delicious. Yeah. I thought it was excellent. And it was, you know, I was so happy and proud that I got to, you know, be in Philly and have a cheesesteak from a renowned place, and then 10 minutes later I was questioning my entire life.
No. I will say, I do want you to go to John's Roast Pork, and I will give you your money back if you don't like that cheesesteak, personally.
No, I believe you. I'm going to go there. I'll be there. Don't you worry.
No, it's all good. But yeah, like I said, and it's funny because Pat's and Geno's is what everyone knows. I get it. Right. They're right. Yep. They're better than what you're going to get in most places, but there's places
there's one in the airport, which is it's one of the locations, but there's one of them that has a location in the airport. Is it Pat's? I can't remember.
I thought it was Geno's. I thought it was
maybe Geno's. It's Geno's. It's one of the two.
Yeah, I don't remember it either. But the thing about those places were, when I lived in Jersey and I was going to school at Rutgers, we would go down there on a Saturday night and get there at like 1 a.m. for a cheesesteak. I mean, you can go there, you know, because they were open 24/7. I don't remember if some of the other places are. I know John's Roast Pork isn't a 24/7 place. I think there's a couple of others, but those places you knew it was always 24/7, and we'd go to both places and usually split the cheesesteaks up that way. Well, yeah. So just wanted to clear the record here.
I'm glad we got that out.
Yeah. I love Eric and Jordan, but they really got on your case with that one.
And several others. It wasn't just them. They were the worst, but there were several other. Andy Griggs, and it was very upsetting to see so many people I thought were friends just attack me in that way.
Yeah. But Terrence, first, you know, we're going to do one more segment, but I wanted to actually talk a little. First up, thanks again for arranging for Eduardo to be on. That was a big treat for us, so we do really appreciate that as well.
My pleasure.
I mean, he's a guy I've been wanting to talk to for a long time, and certainly didn't disappoint there.
You're happy, I'm happy.
Yeah, I'm happy.
And if Aaron's happy too.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, and we share a sentiment. You're doing a good job there. So. Yeah.
Thank you.
Very kind of you to say.
Yeah.
So this torch. I just wanted to comment on this a little more. I do really like this size in it. And I think the packaging was an upgrade on it too. So I think you guys nailed it with this cigar.
Yeah, Max was mostly responsible for the packaging. The size is the thing with the original size was that it had more of instead of the brush foot, it had a shaggy foot, and it was much longer.
Yes.
And that kind of had an impact on it too, because the idea is ultimately that you want to taste the fillers and binders and get it, and get, that kind of wakes up the palate and you get a sense for that. But you don't want to be smoking that for a half hour. And with the original one, you were smoking the shaggy foot for quite a bit. And I think people lost a little patience with that. So we wanted to bring it down a little and put it in sizes that we thought were going to be more appealing as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I do like the, and I'm going to make sure, because I always mix this has the shaggy foot on, not the brush foot.
This is the brush foot. The shaggy foot.
I always mix the two up. Yeah.
Has the jutting tobacco coming out.
Right.
It almost looks like a broom kind of. And then this is just the wrapper is removed from the first half inch in this case. So it's also a little cleaner that way.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah.
Get more consistent flavor. Whereas with the tobacco jutting out all over the place, it looks cool, but it's I think the experience is not as fulfilling.
Yep. The other thing, like I said, I tend to burn a shirt a lot of times with a brush foot is the best. I just usually will find a way to get ash on my shirt badly with those. But yeah, I like how it transitions to the wrapper. You definitely get that. It's a nice, like I said, very, very Aganorsa cigar, to say the least.
Yeah. We released it to, the participants of our Aganorsa Select program, so they're the ones that have it right now, and it'll be more widely available this summer to others. So it's but so far reception's been really good. We've gotten a lot of positive feedback, and people seem to be really excited about it. So that's good. That's the whole name of the game. I want people to enjoy it.
That's true. And this was going to be something. Obviously, it's going to be available to everyone at some point.
Yeah, this summer we're going to open it up to everybody. We've been trying to the people that's that. Are really dedicated to Aganorsa and are really helping promote us and spread the good word, I guess, for lack of a better way to say it. We have a program that they can partake in, and those that do, we want to reward for that. So right now it's just them, but we will open it up to everybody.
Very good. Very good. Aaron, anything else? Well, I know I kind of diverged a little on that segment.
No, I think you're good.
Okay. Terrence, I'm going to do one round of breaks, and then we have one last segment on catalog brands. Can you stick around for that?
Absolutely. If you'll have me.
We absolutely want you. Absolutely want you. So let me mention our sponsors here. With Dumbarton Tobacco and Trust, master blender Steve Saca set out to create Puroson Compromiso, cigars without compromise. This represents an expression of Saca's closely held values and attests in three simple words, everything Saca wants to accomplish. Cigars are more than a passion for soccer. They are a way of life. As for the brands of Dumbarton Tobacco and Trust, Sobra Mesa, Mi Querida, Umbagad, Muestra de Saca, Todos los Días, and Sin Compromiso at your local tobacconist. And by La Aurora Cigars, in the heart of Santiago, Dominican Republic, on the rolling floor at La Aurora Cigar Factory is a section reserved only for the elite, the best of the best. These elite cigar rollers work for over 10 years to simply get the opportunity to make a historic cigar. Those cigars are the La Aurora Preferidos. Featuring six different wrappers and a beautifully packaged perfecto shape, La Aurora Preferidos have been preferred family of the León family for over 115 years. Take part in a legendary tradition that started the Dominican cigar industry. Look to the lion, La Aurora Cigars. We are Dominican defined. And by J.C. Newman Cigar Company, founded in 1895 by Julius Caesar Newman. J.C. Newman Cigar Company is the oldest family-owned premium cigar maker in America. For four generations and 125 years, J.C. Newman has been handcrafting many of the world's finest cigars. J.C. Newman is headquartered in an iconic 109-year-old plus cigar factory in the Ybor City National Historic Landmark District in Tampa, Florida. At this factory known as El Rajol, J.C. Newman rolls premium cigars by hand and hand-operated antique machines. The J.C. Newman Pensa factory is the second largest in Nicaragua. It's where Brickhouse, Perla del Mar, El Baton, and Quorum cigars are hand-rolled. J.C. Newman's Diamond Crown, Maximus, Julius Caesar, and Black Diamond cigars are handmade by Tabacalera A. Fuente in the Dominican Republic. With its longtime partners, the Arturo Fuente family, the Newmans have founded the Cigar Family Charitable Foundation, which supports low-income families in the Dominican Republic with education, healthcare, vocational training, and clean water. Visit jcnewman.com to learn more. And by Casa Cuevas Cigars. The Cuevas family has four generations of cigar experience in cigar making. For many years, they have manufactured cigars for many industry leaders out of the Las Lavas factory in the Dominican Republic. Now the Cuevas family brings a very own brand to market with Casa Cuevas cigars. Try the Casa Cuevas Connecticut, the Casa Cuevas Habano, and the Cuevas Maduro, as well as the recent released Cuevas Reserva line. If they don't carry it, be sure to ask your local retailer for Casa Cuevas cigars. Casa Cuevas, from our casa to yours. And by Cigar Marketplace. Cigar Marketplace is the first B2B premium cigar and accessories online broker that connects premium cigars to retailers, simplifying the way our industry does business. Retailers can now directly order from the suppliers they want without the wait, getting the customers the brands they demand. Wholesalers no longer need to depend on going store to store to find the retailer that fits their brand. This allows retailers to enjoy a one-stop shopping experience for all their store needs. With an optional monthly subscription of $39.99, it allows members to benefit from all order-free shipping, 40% off second-day air rates, 2.5% cash back every 6 months, a refer a friend to program, set discount off 10% naked bundles, and exclusive weekly deals. Non-members can take advantage of Cigar Marketplace's exclusive deals plus free shipping on orders over $750. Visit www.cigarmarketplace.co to learn more. Just a couple, I guess I'll just mention this real quick because I did mention La Aurora Cigars a few times, actually, just now. The Manuel and Noah show, which was scheduled for last week, we had to reschedule because Manuel wasn't feeling well. Manuel's doing better, and we have that confirmation back. He will be doing the June 18th show. So, and I know, Aaron, you have Bobby Newman coming up on a show as well.
Yeah, we'll be doing a show on Thursday, June 11th with Bobby Newman and the guys from Horse Soldier Bourbon and Jeff Borshevitz as well. So we'll be doing a bourbon and the American pairing show.
That's excellent. Excellent. And then as long as we're just doing the programming, so I'll mention next week, Bear and I are doing Special Edition 77. We have Phil Zenge coming on. So make sure you have some caffeine on that show. And then next Thursday, primetime 141, Laurel Tilley from Macanudo is coming on. Yep. So you'll want to stay tuned for those shows next week. Okay, I want to talk a little about catalog brands. And, you know, this is always a touchy subject, I guess, in the cigar business. I don't know about everyone else, but I want to mention this catalog and internet sales. Because lately, as you know, with everything going on in the world, I think a lot of people are turning to internet sales. And I know I have been doing more of that. And I'm not saying that, and I'll say all internet sales are not the same. You know, I think you have, on one hand, you have catalogs, the big catalog companies, but I think you have these other ones who are like extensions of brick and mortars, right, that basically they have it's like an online kiosk, for like better word to put it. You know, for example, Cigar Shop is one, Tailored Smoke just started theirs. Neptune Cigar down in Miami is one I've used. We use Corona, I should say, as well. Smoke In. So I think there's differences there. Would you guys agree that there's, like, when it comes to catalog and internet, there's a separation with those two?
Yeah, I think that's fair to say.
Yeah.
I think it's just more what audience are you gearing for? What specific audience are you looking to speak to, or audiences? Some cases, you know, if you look at some guys, they're really focused on boutique and smaller runs and more, you know, rare things or stuff that's hard to, you know, just generally find. And then other guys have everything from, you want bundles, we got bundles. You want, you know, premium, we got premium. So I think it's more of how wide the audience you're talking to is.
Have you guys seen and I agree with you, Terrence, on that. Have you guys seen I almost feel like whenever I've seen some retailers start an online piece, they almost get like the evil eye, like, yes, before COVID. Like, why do you guys think that was? Why is that such the case? Because, like I said, now I think there's retailers, I guarantee, that wish they had that piece in place.
Oh yeah.
Now they're kind of, you know, because I don't know. I've mentioned it. Grab and go and curbside, I don't think has taken off at some stores. I just don't see it happening. Other stores, some stores it has been, but from what I've seen, it just hasn't replaced either going into the store or then just, hey, you know what? I don't want to take a chance leaving the house. I can just place the order and have it shipped to me.
Right.
Yeah, I think it's kind of divided in the sense that if your store is more of an experienced-based store, where if you look at like a Nat Sherman in New York, you know, Jeff at Corona's, where the whole experience of being there is a huge part of the attraction, I think that is tougher to have grab and go than it is for stores that might have a lounge and may have people hanging out, but tend to be more a convenient stop. So I've heard both. I've heard some shops say, you know what, I'm thinking about reducing lounge space, our numbers really aren't off that much. And then I've heard other people say, yeah, grab and go has done almost nothing for me, and I haven't been able to. I can't wait till we open.
Yeah, I've seen that too. I agree with you on the experience piece, because I think that is that I find if the online retailer extends that experience to the you know, the store experience to what they're doing online, it's good. For example, there's two examples. Like Abe always, they put the handwritten note in there.
Yep.
Abe doesn't do it all anymore because it got to be too much, but someone is at least doing that. And it's a little thing, but I know I appreciate it.
Yeah. I mean, McDonald's and Morton's are both restaurants. I mean, they're geared to do two different things. I think it's important that you know what you're trying to do. I think that's a big part of it. Like if you're more of a convenience based business where people are coming in because it's on the way home or whatever the reason is, and it's not as much to hang out, just putting a lounge in, I don't think necessarily improves your place. Whereas if you're really building an overall experience, the lounge is an aspect of that, obviously. But it's not, it can't be just that. I think that you need to, I think you're going to see more and more pushing in one direction or the other. You're going to see guys that are really going to try to take a more convenience based approach and more, and I don't, that's not like convenience store, but it's going to be more of like, okay, I can go on the way home and I can, you know, call in advance and they'll run it out to my car. And that's perfect for me because where I smoke is on the golf course or at home or whatever. And then there are other places. I mean, cigar bars are the most obvious example, but not specifically them, where the whole reason of going there is to go inside and to interact and to either have a drink or be taken care of by the staff or whatever it is. And so you're going to see a push further in each of those directions. I think it'll be harder to kind of just sit in the middle than it used to be.
Yeah, I agree with that. And you brought up McDonald's, right? And I think there's a really good analogy that I was just thinking about before the show on this. Like, with McDonald's, like, not that I'm a McDonald's fan, but, like, if I'm going to order McDonald's, right, now you have an option where you can get it delivered to your house, right? But you're going to wait, like, an hour to get it. Like, you're not going to get it for at least an hour, right? So, in that case, I could see a grab-and-go option as a little more viable because, you know, if you don't want to wait an hour for hamburger and there's a McDonald's near you, you can go there and do that. Well, as with a cigar, unless I want that cigar, like, right now to come and smoke right away, grab and go is not necessarily an option unless I'm staying there to smoke it in the lounge, and most of the lounges have been closed right now. So I think while the cigar industry's tried with grab and go, it's a different model, I think.
Yeah, and we also have to keep in mind that there's no other option. You're like, you can't, if your store isn't open, the other store isn't open most likely either. So I think that has to be taken into account too.
Yeah.
Because right now, if you say, okay, well, we're going to get rid of the lounge because doesn't really seem to be hurting our business. Well, the guys that want to hang on the lounge are going to go right to wherever there is a lounge that they can hang out in. So
right,
you lose that business. So, I mean, that has to be factored in. But I think, again, ultimately, it just comes down to what are you trying to accomplish?
You guys have used internet, Terrence. You've used it, I think, in your career at Casada and now at Aganorsa, where you've come up with some of these like special releases, and they're available obviously in the store, but you know, it gives people an opportunity. Like, I'm thinking of the Federal cigar releases are a good example. Some of the Dojo cigars you've done where, you know, people nationwide want to experience this as a cigar smoker. And sometimes it's just not as easy to do it. And the easiest way to do it is place the order online. So I think you guys have done a good job with some of that as well.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things I always say about how important convenience is to some degree is that if you look at a place that doesn't have a good parking lot, that's almost always a bad sign. Because it's like people will drive by, they don't see a spot, they're not going to drive around to get a spot. They're just going to keep going. And if they have to go off their path and they drive by a couple of times and it's filled, they stop going out of their way. So I think that's an important thing to keep in mind is that people are gonna do what's convenient for them, and then is your business filling that need? So if you can provide internet and that fits, and you can provide it like you said in your model where like smoking, putting in a card, or Pravada Cigar Club, small batch, and there's a lot of guys that are taking that what they do in a store setting and try to give that, you know, more intimate, personalized experience through the internet, you can do that too. So I think whatever your model is, you should explore all the options that are available to apply it to.
I agree with you on that. You mentioned, you know, and it's funny, a good example of that is like Neptune Cigar, right? I noticed that
Neptune,
one
sure.
In Miami, I've gone there and I can never park, right? And so it's almost easier for me to go back to my hotel and have the order just delivered to me. And then when I get back home from Miami, it's there. You know, I hate to say it, but so I think parking is a huge, I mean, I could tell you, there was a private cigar lounge in Charlotte that had a parking problem in it, and it really led to their demise. It was the old Outland Cigars when there was a parking lot dispute, and it really hurt their business because people couldn't park, and then they just went somewhere else is what happened. Whether they were grabbing, going, or staying in the lounge.
Yeah, people are busy, and as soon as they start feeling like, are they going to get what they came for? And once they start questioning that, that's a really bad sign. Like, whether that's, you know, are they going to have my cigar in stock, or oh, can I park, or whatever it is, that you can maybe once, maybe twice, but after that, the people just thought they find other venues. So you got to be really cognizant of whatever experience you provide, whether it's more, you know, if it's more kind of in and out, or it's an it's a more lounge style, having a full cigar experience. You have to figure it, the ease of that process for the person to partake in.
Yeah. Another question I have is, a lot of times, like, we hear the big catalog companies are evil, right? And I understand it from the small brick and mortar. Don't get me wrong. Aaron, do you think that's an accurate statement?
I don't think it's an accurate statement, really.
It's a kind of loaded question.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a different, it's definitely a different model, but, the large catalog brands can, sell on volume and they can reduce price a bit. So that is direct competition with the local B&Ms. And then based on where they're located, they can, skip past taxes and things like that. So that's another, price benefit. I think they just see it as, it's competing against their local buyers that they would come into the shop if they, selling the same cigars and things like that. But, if you have a B&M, competing against a online catalog is different. You have a lounge, you can do, more personal touches, you can provide an experience in your store that the catalog brands can't. So if you're chasing the price conscious buyer, or that's all that they care about, you're not really going to compete against them unless you're providing something that they can't, and that's what the person's looking for. So it's just, they're different models and they have different consumers, and you just have to know what you're trying to do, like Terrence said. And I don't think if you're trying to just compete against those guys for those sales, for people that are only looking at price, you're just not going to win that battle.
Yeah. And again, also if with bundles, it's a volume based business, it's a guy looking for a $2 or $3 cigar is not, generally speaking, looking to hang out in a high end lounge and drink a single malt scotch and have somebody wait. They're not looking for that. So, and there's a huge part of the population. I mean, if you think of anything, as big as craft beer is, Bud Light outsells all craft beer combined, because that's not because it's I guess some people would figure InBev is bad, but it's a completely different consumer. I mean, it's not like the guy said, instead of having my Pliny the Elder, I'm gonna go pick up a case of Bud Light. It's two different customers. So I think maybe Aaron said it. Just focus on who you're aiming for. Who are you aiming for? And if you do that well, you'll be fine.
Yeah, but Terrence, you've also these big catalog companies that buy it's an important part of your business, I would assume, right? I mean, this is something that you have to do. How do you balance that out with your retailers? Like, because obviously you do have to sell to these guys.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's not. I don't want to make it sound like, oh man, yeah, I got to sell them because they can buy. I mean, if people want to do business with us in the right way, we're gonna work with people, and we have great relationships with our traditional brick and mortars, and we have great relationships with the catalogs. And again, there's bad actors in everything, so there are some online entities out there that buy third party, and then, they don't abide by the rules of things. And then there's some brick and mortars that do some shady things too. So it's not really a matter of one category is good and one category is bad. It's that you can be a great partner to us in either of those categories, as long as you're doing things the right way.
Yeah. I also think that in some of these big catalog houses, they do have some really good private label stuff that, and usually what I try to do is if I buy from them, or if I stop at the CI store or the Casa de Monte Cristo store, that's what I'll tend to buy at those stores. Something I can't get there, because they have stores as well as a catalog. But those are the things I'll tend to buy from them. Something I just can't get from my brick and mortar that I want to try. And I've had some good success with some of it. So there's some very good stuff that's come out with those lines.
I mean, and I can only speak from my experience, but the private labels we've done for various companies while I've been with Aganorsa, nobody's been like, hey, what do you got that's real cheap? Because to be honest with you, that's a closed subject right there. If you're looking to get a whole bunch of overruns for cheap and slapping bands on them, we don't really have that that business, to be honest with you. So that's out right there. But we've never even had that conversation. They've been really into having a great blend and spend time thinking about the sizes. We'll request more samples. This just wasn't strong enough. Could you have something a little bit more, spice or whatever? Again, I think the traditional model of catalog, even that word itself, I mean, there's not too many people that even, the catalogs basically are used as advertising now. Most people don't even use them anymore. I think, it used to be there's catalogs and then there was brick and mortar and it was two different models. And there was, that shifted very much where lots of successful brick and mortars also have online sales, as we just talked about, and a lot of the catalogs also have invested in stores.
Very true. Very true. Aaron, do you seek out catalog private label stuff from time to time? I mean, what's your opinion on that?
Yeah, I mean, if there's on the more premium side, yeah, if there's a brand that does exclusive with them, I'll seek those out. But in regards to bundles and stuff like that, I don't really. When I first got into cigars, I would try some of that stuff, but it's not, the bundle stuff really isn't kind of where I want to spend my time anymore. So, I don't really seek that stuff out, but there'll be online place will get a Vitola exclusive from a line that's been out and things like that. So those, sometimes those are interesting to try. But yeah, for the most part, the bundle stuff, I kind of stay away from.
Yeah. I mean, I was thinking of the old, one example, there was one size, I forget what it was. I always lost my train of thought. I want to say it was a Herrera Esteli or something like that that went to JR a size, and I thought it was really good. Mm-hmm. But so yeah, that's what I tend to, or if it's by a certain blender, and I kind of see that they're not just throwing it out there, they're trying to make something of it, like invest in it as a long term brand. Right. Then I have a lot. Then I said, you know what, it's got some legs. I'll look at that. I'll certainly review it if that's the case with that. As well, but I think we all support our brick and mortar people, so we're not trying to take any business away from them either. I won't bring a, don't get me wrong, I won't bring a cigar into the shop from them and smoke it. That's kind of shitty, but that's what I'll do there.
Yeah, I think during this time, I'm sure you've had the same issue. Well, you're trying to struggle to find out where you can buy some of these newer releases that'll come out this year. And if you want to buy four different brands, trying to find one place that has all of those is tough. So you're kind of searching around for, who you can buy from that has, multiples of what you're looking for. And, I've gone around and I've reached out to people in their shops that don't have online presences, but they'll still ship. I'll reach out and do that. I reached out, to Lake Country Cigars in Wisconsin. To buy some cigars. They had, five different lines that I was looking to buy. So I was able to call them up, place the order. They're able to ship them out. It's a B&M. It's not, it's not like a catalog or anything like that. I'm supporting a B&M. It's just not my local one. But it works out.
Yeah, it was funny when Terrence told Seth about the Supreme Leaf, right? He called up Tinderbox, right? And he said to me, he had messaged me, hey, Tinderbox has had him, right? But Seth and I didn't talk, right? So I called Tinderbox up and they went, no, we don't have it. We don't have it. I'm like, no, I know it's there. Go look in the humidor, right? So I have this guy in the humidor. I ended up buying four boxes of other stuff. He's like, I have this. And then finally they said, that was a mistake. We're out of it. He goes, you still want the four boxes? I'm like, yeah.
Yeah.
So it happened. I mean, it happens sometimes. But that cigar went very fast, Terrence. I gotta say that. Sometimes I was like, so yeah, I did manage to get a couple of those. So I'm glad.
Other than my wild goose chase I sent you on, have you had trouble initially locating stuff? Like Aaron just mentioned, has that been a problem to find things?
Not with regular production stuff, it's more the limited release stuff I have a problem with.
Because it's an interesting thing, and I was on a group with barrel burners, that group the other day. I was in one of their Zoom meetings, and I actually asked them about this, and I'm shocked. When I want to find something, generally speaking, I just Google it in, right? I just say, okay, I'm not talking about cigars, anything, it's like, oh, I'm looking, I read a review of an interesting book. I just Google it and it'll show up. And I can't tell you how many times people will be like, hey, I can't. I mean, the Supreme Leaf was a little different because it sold out so fast. Yeah. But generally speaking, like a quick Google search, or if they just or be like, oh, like I go to this brick and mortar, it's like, yeah, they have it there. Like, I don't know. It doesn't seem like people like put a ton of effort to finding things, right, for the most part. I mean, some people do. So, I mean, you guys are obviously an exception to that because it's part of what you guys do. But it's just funny to me that people will be like, yeah, I can't. Like, where could I find this? And I don't mind answering. I mean, I like when people reach out to us, but it's always funny to me that they seem so hard pressed to find something. And then I'll just like, I'll even check myself. I'm like, ah, if I Googled this, would this come up? And there'll be like 15 different places they could potentially get it from. So it's funny.
Yeah, I've had that problem with three cigars. The Supreme Leaf was one, and I did Google it. The other one was the Christoph TAA, which I waited too long to buy. And I Googled it and couldn't find it anywhere. I actually called Jared, and Jared managed to get some to me because I like to collect each of the TAA cigars every year. And then I think Unstolen Valor was a little bit of a different case, Aaron, because I think what happened is a couple of retailers got it early.
Yeah.
And then we saw it sold out everywhere. We couldn't find it.
Yeah.
But then some of them got it, and I guess it was Lake Country that had it, right?
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, so it tends to be more of the limited stuff that I'll see that, and it's certain limited stuff that's high profile that we want to obviously smoke, review, and enjoy them too. So it's not like that TAA one was the first time I ever had a problem finding a TAA cigar, and that was just because they did a very small amount of those. And there's other TAA cigars like you can easily get, so. You know, but I think for the most part, I haven't had too much problem getting it. But yeah, I agree. It's funny. Google's the place I'll always go. And I get asked that from, like, readers will ask me, and what do? I just Google it, right? Because I know they didn't Google it. And they're like, yeah, you get it. Yeah, if it's one of the stores we have a relationship with, I'll send them to those first. One more question for you guys. News today, Inner Tobacco canceled. No, so I don't think any surprises there, right?
I don't think so.
No, I don't think that was shocking to anybody.
No, the only thing that was interesting about that one was a couple things interesting. One is apparently they got a lot of push. This is what the people I spoke to when that story broke this morning. I started doing some phone calls to a couple of folks, and I guess what happened is they got a lot of pushback after they announced they were going to try to have it. There was an incredible amount of pushback, and then ultimately they made their decision pretty quickly on that. They were originally going to, I think, hold off on the decision until June, but they decided not to.
Yeah, I'm surprised they did anyway, to be honest with you. I mean, what difference does it make if you wait another month or something like that? You know, who knows what things will be like. But,
yeah,
I guess, like you said, you get enough feedback and you say, maybe it's not a good idea. Or maybe there's deposits to be paid or God knows what else. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And then again, Aaron, just, you know, not to pick on the TA, these guys had the opposite problem. They were telling select members first.
Yeah.
So this was like another problem is like, then I had, you know, I actually had people in the industry asking me this today. Like, is this true? And I'm like, I think it is. It's like, I didn't know for sure, but yeah, so they kind of bungled that one up, I think, too. They should have just put it out there and made it more difficult. I don't know if I have a feeling it leaked out earlier than they wanted it to is what happened.
Yeah, it's a tough thing because I mean, sometimes in an organization, if you're involved, you don't want to read headlines saying, oh, why was I not made of this first? But then you run the risk of, I mean, to be honest with you, sometimes we even have that difficulty with reps. Well, they'll get upset about kind of reading about something. It's like, oh, how come I didn't know about this, you know, or why am I reading this press release now instead of, you know, finding out about it before? So we try to inform them sooner, but sometimes what happens is like they, you know, somebody sends it out or they, and then it gets leaked out. And then, you know, then you have another problem where it's like, oh, well, how come so-and-so got this before me? And so it's a difficult thing. You want to have everybody be aware, you know, but also be respectful of kind of the people in your organization that, you know, probably have a right to know first.
Yeah, I gotta say, Terrence, you know, I'm not just saying because you're on the show and I'm trying to kiss up to you.
Thank you. Oh, it doesn't mind. It's fine.
Over the years, you've been outstanding. I have no complaints. with how I've been dealing with you with Quesada or Aganorsa leaf. So you're in the highest tier in my book.
Oh, excellent. Thank you.
Yeah. Even when you've had to give, like, I know you sometimes you have to do the cigar fishing, and I get that, but we've gotten it timely, and that's I've always appreciated that. So that part's been important. So I want to really thank you, because that's important to us to have it timely, and I do understand sometimes there's exclusive windows. So, like I said, I have no complaints on that with you.
Yeah, and also sometimes, I mean, I think people, you know, they kind of also have a more traditional model still where, like, if I sent you a story, I mean, how quick can you have it up if I sent you a story right now?
Right. I'm like someone in the middle of the day job, right? It's like when there's a couple of companies that will hold it for 2 weeks. Like, that's been where the problem is, or even a few days. That's where the problem's been. But you're right. It's the same thing. I understand people aren't like refreshing a keyboard. But like I said, sometimes I'm in the middle of a meeting at work and I can't get to it. And I work on this stuff late in the day or at night or at lunchtime. So,
but I mean, even in the worst case scenario, I mean, how fast could you have a story up within 24 hours, I imagine?
But now it's actually longer because I actually use a proofreader. So, and when I don't use the proofreader is when I have problems, because then Aaron catches it right away. Right. And he will. No.
But most of us can get a story out in a couple hours.
Yeah. Yeah, both of us can get out in a couple hours. Yeah. Like I said, it's reasonable with that.
Whereas with them, they tend to, they'll send questions back. And it, usually with them, it takes 4 or 5 days unless you really push them hard
right.
to get out sooner, because they just have a process. Yeah. So, you know, sometimes it's balancing with them of, okay, we're going to be releasing this, Thursday at 3, you know, to everybody. So you're going to need to get it up, you know, at some point on Thursday, because it's going to be out there. You know? So, you know, that's it. Yeah. And like I said, you're trying to make everybody happy, and it's not easy.
No, like I said, and your stuff's been pretty complete too when I get it. So it doesn't usually require the most, like I get a lot of stuff. It's like requires like multiple either phone calls or multiple emails. So it's always really complete what we get from you. So I got to, you know, again, thanks for that as well.
No, my pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Guys, anything else before we wrap up here?
I think so.
All right. Terrence, I want to, again, thank you for hanging around for the show. I want to thank you for bringing, again, Eduardo on as well. Like I said, looking forward to great things. It was a great night.
So, the greatest night of our lives.
It was the greatest night. No, this was like, this was one of the boxes I got to check tonight. So I was really, really happy about that. On that.
Excellent.
So, and thanks for sticking around as well.
My pleasure.
All right. To our audience, thank you as always. Aaron, I don't know if we've ever had a month like this of guests. So
no, I think it's been one of the best.
Yeah, I think we're gonna shoot for June as well.
Yeah.
So we have some things in the like we mentioned, Manuel and Noah is coming on. We have a couple of others we're trying to confirm, and nail down dates for. So stay tuned on that. But that's gonna wrap up Primetime. Episode 140 into the annals of history, and it is still Thursday, May 28th in the U.S. and all the time zones. We'll see everybody next week. Have a great night, everybody.
See you guys.
Take care, guys.